Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. As entrepreneurs who are constantly going out there, growing our businesses, creating the content, and doing all the other things that we need to do, it is a lot of work to continue to build on that business that first started as an idea. And while it's really exciting to be working on our passions, the entrepreneurial lifestyle, there are some moments where we could temporarily lose motivation, temporarily lose the spark. And it is in moments like these that we need to quickly re-tap into our fire, re-tap into our work and make it exciting for ourselves, have a thrill to be able to do the work that we're doing that we could sometimes take for granted. So in this episode, we're going to focus on being able to find the fire and make our work exciting again. So to talk about this with us, today's guest, he is a passionate expert on employee engagement, motivation, inspiration, workplace fulfillment, and others-oriented leadership. He is the CEO of Profound Performance, a keynote workshop, coaching, and online training company that helps you work, lead, and live fulfilled. He is a popular keynote speaker and author of the October 2017 release, Find the Fire, Ignite Your Inspiration and Make Work Exciting Again. Today's guest for episode 237 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Scott Motz. Scott, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, great to be here, man. I'm all fired up after hearing your intro. I'm ready to, let's get some Breakthrough Success, baby. Love it.
Scott, I'm really looking forward to our interview together and finding the fire. I mean, the book that you released in October 2017 taps on a really important concept where we got to find that inspiration when maybe we've hit a block or maybe we just need to power through. So I'm really looking forward to diving into this topic. But before we do that, I'd like to get a little background. So can you talk a little bit about why you decided to write Find the Fire and a little bit of the backstory behind that book?
Yeah, you bet, Mark. I'm a corporate veteran. I spent 24 years at Procter & Gamble, which is based in Cincinnati. A lot of your listeners have probably heard of Procter & Gamble. I was pretty blessed to run several of their largest multi-billion-dollar businesses. And, you know, I loved every minute of it. And that was, you know, we achieved breakthrough success in our businesses, which was great. But I was really most proud of how we did it, being able to pull people along the way in the right way, getting them motivated and fulfilled each and every step of the way and not looking at work as drudgery. And as I went through that, you know, the process of trying to lead people through a variety of business challenges, I started to look around and find that I think I had created a pocket within my company, a little bit of an island where people really enjoyed coming and working. And it wasn't necessarily the case in the rest of the company or in a lot of other companies other than the one that I worked in. And I really started to become aware of a truth that I can really boil down to one statistic, which is a pretty amazing one that kind of confirmed my feelings, which is that, you know, Gallup issues surveys just about every other year trying to measure the level of engagement in the workforce, Mark, across the United States and around the globe. And the number isn't getting much better. Their most recent survey shows that 70% of the workforce at any point in time is disengaged. Amongst that 70%, 20% is actively disengaged, which means they're engaging in sabotaging behaviors in the workplace. And it kind of confirmed what I felt I was feeling, that, you know, a lot of people get trapped in a job and it becomes just a thing to them, a means to make money, and it could be so much more for them. That's when I knew, when I confirmed it through data and research, that, wow, we have a crisis in the workplace for big companies, medium companies, small companies, and entrepreneurs, anybody that wants to hire and retain a talented workforce. We have got to figure out how to better re-inspire our workforce, teach them how to do that moving forward. And that's what kind of lit the spark for me, Mark, to write this book. And I began to dive in with pretty much all my heart and soul into researching and writing the book, Find the Fire.
And it's interesting you mentioned all of the disengagement that people have with the work that they are doing. And like, this can even affect the best of us, like even the highest achievers, because there are just some days where we feel more engaged than others. And it's very important to continue to find that fire, even on days where it may not be sparking as brightly. And I feel like one of the keys to being able to stay in this a zone where we just constantly do our work and be constantly engaged is to figure out what is that exactly drains our inspiration. So Scott, I'm wondering if you go a little deeper into that, just a few of the things that you believe drain the inspiration we have for our work.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'll give you a little bit of, happy to do that. I'll give you a little bit of setup to that too, as well. Here's the crazy thing, Mark, you know, when you ask, okay, so, all right, I got it. I accept it. A lot of employees are uninspired at work. Maybe that's not so surprising. So the first thing people say is, all right, well, look, maybe my boss can help me out of this malaise, you know, because the boss counts for so much of how we perceive our work and our job. And, you know, the truth is that the majority of employees, well over 55, closer to 60% now these days with the most recent research, you know, say that the number one thing they want from their boss, whether it's a founder, if you're an entrepreneur, or a mid-level boss or a high-level boss, the number one thing they want from their boss is for them to be inspiring. 60% of people almost now say that. And yet when you ask them, so is your boss inspiring? Only 11% say yes. So there's a huge gap. And the first problem is you can't count on your boss to do it for you. You got to do it yourself. So then the next barrier arises, which is, well, okay, but man, re-inspiring myself, that seems pretty elusive. It seems kind of fickle. If I can't wait around for my boss to do it, like, you know, I don't know. Doesn't inspiration just show up when it's darn good and ready? And that's the next myth. And it turns out that, you know, research teaches us that inspiration could actually be codified and coaxed, that you can create the conditions where inspiration is much more likely to occur. It starts with asking yourself the right question. And then I'm going to attack what you asked directly in just a second here. Most of us ask the wrong question when we're feeling uninspired, Mark. We'll say, well, all right, I got to pull myself out of this. The boss isn't going to do it. The workplace isn't going to do it. I got to do it. So let's see. Well, what can I do to inspire myself? Well, the problem is that's pretty passive. The answer to that is often quite passive and elusive, or it gets repressed in a toxic work environment. And it turns out we've been asking ourselves the wrong question for decades. The right question to ask when we're feeling uninspired is not, well, geez, what inspires me? The question is, how did I lose my inspiration in the first place? Because it was everywhere when we started in our job. Everywhere, around every corner. You didn't have to try very hard to look for it. And the truth is, it turns out, there are forces that naturally drain that naturally occurring inspiration that we felt when we started in a job. And it sucks the life out of us over time. And most of us are unaware of what those sources are. So now to get directly to your question, after a little bit of setup, through my research, I also am a faculty at Indiana University, and I've been studying the topic of inspiration at work for over two decades and practicing it in the corporate environment on multi-billion dollar businesses. I've discovered there are nine what I call anti-muses. For those of you and your listeners that might be a little bit familiar with Greek mythology, there's the term called the muse. And, you know, maybe you've heard of it, Mark, the old saying of, oh, I'm waiting for my muse to whisper to me so I can become inspired again. They were Greek goddesses, the nine muses that were in charge of inspiring artists to become inspired once again. The nine daughters of Zeus and Cyanemi, according to Greek folklore, I guess. But what if the opposite was true? What if there were nine anti-muses? As it turns out, the research supports there really are. So for example, maybe one of the most fearsome anti-muses is fear, and specifically fear of failure, how that can drain our inspiration. And I can go back and talk in any one of these, Mark. I'll just give you an example of a few. Another common anti-muse is the sense of settling and boredom that we can feel in our job. And I don't care how big or small your company is, even if you're a solopreneur, a sense of settling and boredom and sameness can settle in, and we begin to assume that's the new norm and that's the way things have to be. And our inspiration can exit stage left. As can happen when we engage in a dwindling sense of self-belief. I can't tell you the amount of people that I've coached over my career that they were feeling a sense of inspiration draining because they were no longer believing in themselves. Maybe they were in a toxic relationship with their boss. Maybe the conditions at work weren't well suited to them, or they were in a tough economic environment, and they were starting to doubt themselves. And when we start to doubt ourselves, our sense of inspiration at work sneaks right out the window. I'll give you one more. Those are three anti-muses. One more common force that drains our inspiration, whether or not we realize it, is simply when we become inundated and we fail to make choices and set priorities and we become overwhelmed. And I often say to crowds that I speak to that inundation is like the new black. It's like in trend. It's on point now for people to say how overwhelmed they are in their lives, Mark. And the truth is, when you're inundated like that, all it manages to do is drain your sense of accomplishment, of course, but also slowly it eats at how much you actually want to get up in the morning, hit that alarm, get out of bed and go to work because you feel overwhelmed and uninspired. Those are just four sources that I covered. I can talk about more or go deeper on any one of the anti-muses, the forces that drain our inspiration, according to where you want to go next, Mark.
One of the anti-muses that I would like to talk a little bit deeper is fear, because fear is you really hit it on the head. Fear is one of the biggest ones. It was the first one that you mentioned, because we have this fear of failure. We have this sense that we have to be perfect. So I wonder if we could talk a little bit more specifically about that one and how to get rid of it.
Yeah, you bet. I'll tell you, Mark, without question. I mean, I have interviewed thousands of employees, and higher level executives to Hollywood producers, to creators, to five-star chefs, to people who run entire companies. I mean, you name it. Without question, fear of failure is the top thing that comes up as what drains my sense of inspiration the most. And here's the beautiful thing about it, Mark, is that you really can attack your fear of failure by simply reframing it. You have a choice to reframe the way you look at fear of failure. And, you start by understanding how difficult it is. And I want to address that because neuroscience actually teaches us just how difficult it is. If this was a visual show, I could show you a brain scan of a brain literally experiencing fear of failure. And what you would see is all the neurons in the parietal lobes of the brain, the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain, firing as they respond to a tacit fear of failure. And in the frontal lobe of the brain, you would see in the same MRI scan, it's completely dark. That's the part of the brain responsible for growth, exploration, and risk-taking. And what happens is our fear of failure literally shuts down the part of our brain responsible for taking risks and stretching and growing. That's what we're up against. But the good news is, Mark, is that you and your listeners, you can reframe your fear of failure. Let me give you just a few powerful examples that I talk about in the book, Find the Fire. For example, you can do this for employees, you can do this for yourself, you can do it for friends, you can do it for anybody. What if you were to fundamentally believe, that there's only three ways you can actually fail? When you quit, when you don't improve, or when you never try. If you really believe that, that would have such an exhilarating and freeing effect on you. What if I were to remind you that failure is an event, not a person? I've coached so many people over the years that run into a little bit of a kind of a backlash or a little bit of an experience of failure, and they assume it defines who they are as a person, rather than choosing to view that as a one-off event. And failure is never, never a person. It's an event. What if I were to tell you that failure doesn't happen to you? It happens for you. Failure doesn't happen to you to destroy you. It happens for you so that you can learn. What if I were to tell you that your fear of failure, it shouldn't scare you? That little gut, that little thing you feel in your gut, Mark, right before you're about to try something that scares you a little bit, that feeling's actually not there to scare you. That feeling is there to tell you that it must be worth it to pursue it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be feeling anything at all. You would be numb to it. So it must be worth it. I'll give you one more example. You can reframe fear of failure by simply telling yourself, when you suffer, or, you know, when you fail, rather, you're not the one that suffers. In truth, it's your ego. And you and your ego are not the same thing. I learned to work past my own fear of failure by remembering that if something goes wrong, it'll be my ego that's hurt, and I can bruise, you know, that bruised ego. I can distance myself from that because that's not who I am. The ego is almost a separate part of us that, you know, needs to be nurtured the most and is the biggest whiner. It should sit at the kids' table, you know, along with the rest of the unhelpful emotions in our life. You don't have to give in to that. You can choose to distance it from yourself and know that when you fail, you're not the one that suffers, it's your ego. Just like that, in what, 2 minutes, I gave 5 different ways to reframe a fear of failure, and your listeners can do the same exact thing.
And I really like this idea of reframing, and you can use that for any challenge you face, any fear that you face, any of the anti-muses that you face, but especially the fear of failure, because some people, like, I mean, as you pointed out, like, they view themselves as failures if they quit, or they don't improve, or they don't try. So it failure, as you mentioned, is just an event. It's not necessarily like an individual. Like, no person is a failure. It's just the event that happens, and you can always pick yourself up after that. So I really liked how you tackled that fear of failure. And one of the things I also want to address is we've so far been talking about finding the fire, like reclaiming it in a sense where, okay, we're feeling drained from our inspiration. How do we get back to feeling inspired? But I also want to approach this from another angle. So let's say that the listener right now is fueled with inspiration. Like, they are chugging along, they're going, they're learning as much as they can. They're really putting in a lot of action, but they want to preserve that level of inspiration. So how exactly do we preserve the inspiration once we have it?
Great question, Mark. And here's exactly what you need to know. Think of it as an awareness campaign. What happens almost invariably, it must happen to many of us, or the statistics wouldn't tell us that 70% of us are disengaged. Something happens along the way, right? That you're inspired, and then we lose it. So what happens is an awareness campaign. If people can be aware of all of the anti-muses and keep them in front of you, you can be a lot more aware than the average worker and the average employee, and you can avoid falling into those traps. So, for example, I'll quickly round out. You know, we talked about fear, settling in boredom, inundation, a feeling that your self-belief is dwindling. Put those on alert. Be very aware that those are some of the 4 biggest ways. Some of the other ways that I talk about in the book, Find the Fire, when we feel we're losing our sense of control, that you know, we realize, wow, I don't really have much of an influence on anything around here anymore. I used to make decisions and now I don't. My boss's boss does. I used to, you know, things are kind of out of control. That's another way we lose our sense of power. As if, you know, as also happens when we stop creating. One of the most heartfelt things I felt in interviews was, wow, I became uninspired when I realized I haven't produced original and exciting and interesting work for the world in a long time. I stopped creating. I got into a rut and I produce reports and I go on sales calls and I do the same thing over and over. And I stopped creating anything unique and individual for the world that expresses who I am and my talents. That's another huge anti-muse, as is a sense of feeling disconnected from your coworkers, that you're isolated from them. And you know, maybe there's some coworkers you don't like, or it's not the kind of environment that breeds camaraderie. Or maybe it's a sense of insignificance that the work you're doing, if you were honest, really doesn't matter that much. Or finally, the last anti-muse is just, it's no longer evoked in you because the environment around you is so toxic, that your boss is such a jerk, you can't get past it. And all these other things don't matter because you have to deal with that boss every day. So what happens is the accumulation of these nine things, you know, I ripped through the nine anti-muses. It's an awareness campaign of not every one mark is going to apply to every single person. If every one of your listeners had all nine of these anti-muses enter their life, we'd have a lot of really messed up people in the workforce. What happens is there's usually two or three where someone could say, oh, I could see how I could fall into this trap. So, for example, you know, your listener might be hearing this saying, yeah, you know, I'm pretty good on fear. You know, I'm self-confident, but boy, I could see getting settled and bored in a hurry if I'm not learning. I could see becoming overwhelmed quickly with the amount of work I've got to do. And, you know, I could see feeling like my work doesn't matter that much, a sense of it. So your listeners can know which ones really speak to them, which anti-muses, which forces that drain inspiration speak to them, and be really aware that those are the things that, if they're not careful, could trap them. And then they look back years later and their inspiration has drained when they once had it. So being aware of the anti-muses up front and the ones that apply to you, Mark, is the best advice I give people to maintain their inspiration. And even when they're entering a new job, if you're wondering, wow, I want to go to a job that's really going to stick, ask employees that work in that company, you know, hey, look, is there like a lot of fear in this company? Do people tend to lose their sense of self-belief? Do you get a chance to contribute unique contributions? You can ask questions that will unveil whether or not anti-muses already exist in the culture, to know whether or not that company would be a good fit for you. So you absolutely can preserve and never even enter situations where your inspiration might be drained if you're aware of the nine anti-muses.
And I really like that idea of getting clear on which the anti-muses are the ones that are affecting you the most. Like you mentioned, like for some people, fear may not be the issue, but it's the issue of feeling settled that maybe the anti-muse that drains inspiration. So like not all of them apply to you. Some of them will. It's important to just figure out which ones apply to you and trying to either like go into a workplace or create an environment where those anti-muses cannot do much to you, and then you're able to be full speed ahead with the inspiration. And we've talked about the anti-muses. We talked about a lot of awesome things with keeping the fire and also finding the fire if you find yourself drained of inspiration. But what do you believe holds most people back from being able to find their fire?
Yeah, by great question, Mark. By far, they assume incorrectly, and it's understandable. They assume that, look, work is work. It is what it is. Like, you know, I'm either going to be inspired or not. Either the environment's going to help me out. My boss is either going to be great or not great, because otherwise inspiration is really fickle and it's mysterious. And inspiration comes to people who climb mountains in Tibet to visit monks, right? And, you know, I can't just conjure it up. And if people don't understand in general what I've discovered through two decades of research, and which is becoming clearer and clearer the more and more research that I do, which is actually inspiration can be codified and coaxed. If you're disciplined about knowing what drains it, you can reverse the flow and you really can bring inspiration back into your work life. So to your question, Mark, what holds most people back is they assume work is work, man. It is what it is, but it's not. It's not. You don't have to accept the reality of your workplace. You can change your relationship with your job. And when you do, Mark, it can change everything.
And I find it really interesting how, so you mentioned some people have like that set relationship with how they view their work, and it's something that can be changed, as Scott pointed out. And I mean, like, just look at your relationship with work now, even if it's something that you're enjoying. Think about how you can enjoy it more. Think about how you can find more inspiration. And if you feel like you're drained, think about how you can change that relationship so that you are able to find a little more joy in the work that you're doing. And I think part of what drains us is the amount of challenges that we face throughout our journey. And with that in mind, Scott, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Yes, a great question. I've faced my own number of anti-muses. I'm the farthest thing from perfect. And for me, you know, one of the things that I really learned, especially as I left the corporate world and entered the world of being an entrepreneur, despite all the success I had in the corporate world running literally the company's largest multi-billion-dollar businesses, I still had this gnawing sense of, you know, am I going to be good enough as an entrepreneur? Am I going to make it on my own out there in that world? You know, yeah, I've been studying for years. I have so much value to share. I have, you know, best-selling books, you know, but is all of that going to uphold over time? And it's a little bit of the fear of failure bug, but it's also learning that I needed to stop seeking approval. And one of the most powerful things that I learned was it's so much more important that you seek authenticity instead of approval. And in the corporate world, at least, I found the bugaboo of so many young employees was they were defined by what their boss thought of them and what the environment thought of them. How well did they rate versus other employees? Was their boss in favor of them, and did they give them favorable reviews, and were they accepted? And even as young entrepreneurs that I coach now, you still hear, you know, am I going to make it? Will I be good enough? Will my family think I'm a failure? Will they approve of what I'm doing and how I'm doing it? Will my potential clients approve of the value I have to offer? Will they pay me the value that I think I'm worth? And on and on. And I learned the power of striving for approval versus authenticity and to stop comparing. My first couple of months of being an entrepreneur, Mark, I would compare so often to other entrepreneurs. How are they doing? What's their revenue stream like? What's their business model like? Does mine stack up to theirs? And am I as good on stage as some of the best in the country? Are my books as good as some of the best other authors? On and on and on. And I soon learned the power of being able to say the only comparison that matters is to who I was yesterday. And am I becoming a better version of myself? Yes or no? Am I living my values? Am I learning enough and becoming a better version of myself such that I'm able to serve other employees and other people in the workforce and teach them about meaning and inspiration in their work? Yes or no? That's why I left corporate, to be able to do that. If I'm getting better at that every day, that's the only comparison that matters. And once I built that in my life, Mark, boy, it really changed the trajectory of the health of my mental mindset, I guess, is a way to put it. And I haven't looked back since.
And I really find it it's a really great lesson for all listeners, to just focus on being better than you were yesterday. Focus on being a better you instead of comparing yourself with others, because you compare yourself with the wrong people, you can feel really small no matter how big your accomplishments are. So Scott gave really good advice there. Just the idea of constant not comparing yourself with others and self-improvement. And one of the things that I do for my self-improvement is I read as many books as I can get my hands on. And with that in mind, Scott, I'm wondering if you could share with us three books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. You know, I love Winning Well. That's a really great book by Karen Hurt and David Dye that talks about the process of being a great leader. And in so doing, you know, you can win, but you don't have to sell your soul. I love that book. I love Die Empty by Todd Henry, which is a book about how to give your creative best each and every day that you're out there, and that you don't have to do subpar work right up until the moment you enter, the ground for whatever you believe comes next in life. And then, I can't resist a kind of a classic, to be honest with you, Good to Great, which I'm sure many of authors have recommended this by Jim Collins, but it really shows us, it's such a powerful concept to apply, not just in business, but in life. And with many of my teams, we would sit down and we would define what was the difference between good on a certain performance vector and what did great look like. And we would literally spell it out to create clarity on the difference between good and great. So I find that book still to be a powerful read and very applicable in many different shapes of life.
Scott, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations. Those will all be in the show notes, markcaberti.com/E237. We will also throw in my book, Content Marketing Secrets, in the show notes. The link to that is markcaberti.com/book, where you can grab your free copy, just pay for the shipping. And before we wrap up this episode, Scott, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Yeah, great. Great question. I think it's probably the most important question is simply, am I becoming a better version of myself than I was yesterday? when you ask yourself that question, it drives us towards non-ending self-improvement. It drives people to listen to podcasts like yours and to never accept themselves as a finished product. I think we can't ask ourselves that enough.
Scott, thank you for sharing with us that great question, all of your great insights throughout our time together. I love that theme of self-improvement. And to further go on that path of self-improvement, if you guys want to learn more about Scott, see what he's doing, I just recommend you guys get your copy of Find the Fire, Ignite Your Inspiration, and Make Work Exciting Again. That link will be in the show notes. But Scott, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of your great insights with us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
Thank you so much, Mark. And I set up a free premium for your listeners as well. If they want to go to scottmautz.com, S-C-O-T-T-M-A-U-T-Z.com, I have it set up where they can download a free companion workbook that goes along with Find the Fire. You know, research teaches us that when we write down key insights and concepts, it really aids in retention and recall of those key ideas. So they can go to scottmautz.com if they want to download a free companion workbook to my best-selling book, Find the Fire. Thanks so much for having me on, Mark.
My pleasure, Scott. It was great to have you on the show. Those links will be in the show notes as well. But thank you once again, Scott, for taking the time to share all of your great insights with us.
Onward to breakthrough success.
That's it.
All right, Mark. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate what you do and what you're trying to do with your show. It's super cool. And I love that you read as many books as you can. I do the same thing. I'm a nerd that way. I love it.
Thank you, Scott. And reading books is just something like so valuable. Like there's a lot of like great insights just in all the books that are available.
Love it. Love it. Love it. When you're done producing this thing and you've got, got up and ready, send me a link and a badge if you have it, and I will share it with my network. Be happy to do that.
Yeah, I'll definitely share it. And one question that I do want to ask you is, I know that you you go to Indiana University for some of the teaching, and I'm wondering, do you know how to get a book into the library?
Good question. I don't know. Let me find out. Here's what I'll do. When I'm back there in early August, I'll talk to the director of the MBA program where I teach, and I'll ask him if he's got a good answer that's useful to you. I'll put a note. In fact, I'm writing a note right here on my calendar right now. Hold on a second. Okay. So if I can get an answer from him that's useful to you, I'll just email you and say, dude, here's how you do it. Because I honestly have zero idea, but I'll find out.
All right, thank you, because I'm trying to get content marketing secrets. One of the places I want to see it more is in universities, because I feel like that insight would be very useful for college students.
Love it. I think you're right. You're going to see a lot of kids coming out. We're ready to roll into that. So I appreciate what you do, Mark, and thank you so much for having me on the show, man. You have a great balance of your week.
Thank you, Scott. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Okay, brother. Be good. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn